This is NPR's Morning Edition. I'm Renee Montaigne. During Morning Edition's first year on the air on May 19, 1980, Bob Edwards brought you this unprecedented weather report for the western states.
Here's the weather for the western half of the country. Clouds of volcanic ash from eruptions of Mount St. Helens volcano are blocking visibility in Washington state. The clouds have spread as far east as the western part of Montana. Travelers' advisories of poor visibility are...
The eruption of Mount St. Helens killed 57 people. The bodies of some victims were never found. NPR's Howard Berkus was at the mountain when it erupted 19 years ago. He recently returned to see how nature is faring there 19 years later.
To appreciate what it's like now at Mount St. Helens, listen to what it was like then, as described by President Jimmy Carter after a helicopter tour of the area.
The ash is several hundred feet deep. There are tremendous clouds of steam coming up. There's an enormous iceberg, as big as a mobile home, lie there melting. There's no way, I mean, it's to describe it. It's an unbelievable sight.
It's still an unbelievable sight, but for different reasons, to Charlie Crisafulli, an ecologist with the U.S. Forest Service. He stands in the same river valley Jimmy Carter looked down on 19 years ago.
On May 18th, 1980, this area was, early in the day, this was still flowing. I mean, when this stuff came to rest, there was still water working its way through the system. In terms of plants present, this area essentially had no organisms that survived. And so everything, it's important to note, is that this is started anew. Everything you see from these tiny mosses and grasses, the willows, frogs, the waterfowl, the red-winged blackbirds, elk, everything has colonized since 1980. And that's quite remarkable to think of the rate at which all these organisms have come back in.
Crisafulli hikes among earthen hummocks 10 stories high, brown and tinged with snow. They're the remains of the biggest landslide ever recorded, the collapse of the entire north slope of Mount St. Helens as the big 1980 eruption began. Rock and ice smothered 17 miles of river valley and forest, as much as 600 feet deep. That debris avalanche, as it's called, left these dry hummocks, but ponds formed in the depressions between them, inviting new life.
For example, the western toad, which is a species that ranges from Colorado to California and from Montana into BC, sharp declines in the species have been documented. However, in the Mount St. Helens blast zone, the species is absolutely flourishing. So there are some real surprises, and I think amphibians is an enormous success story in terms of a group of species that was able to respond and have flourished for the most part.
Another surprise is the mix of birds high up on the mountain, where the full force of the eruption hit, leaving a treeless plain of pumice 200 feet deep. Birds more common in pastures, wetlands, and high deserts fly there now, finding familiar habitat in patches of grass, new lakes and ponds, or the desert-like plain. We add one more bird to the mix to check out the high slopes ourselves.
Okay, the intercoms should be working now for everybody. And here we go.
It's an iffy day for flying, with low cloud cover and snow squalls blowing through. But helicopter pilot Neil Lawson is a veteran of Mount St. Helens, as is Rick Hoblett, a geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. We fly up the river valley filled with hummocks and ponds and toads, tracing the path of the big 1980 eruption.
The blast more or less followed the top of the ridge down this side of the valley. It just about coincided with the end of the debris avalanche deposit.
The debris avalanche is another surprise. Scientists have seen the hummocks elsewhere, but didn't connect them with massive volcanic landslides, which they now recognize at volcanoes around the world. Our first stop is the pumice plain, blanketed with snow, which flows like a gigantic tongue out of the mouth of the mountain, the gaping crater the eruption left behind. We hover, set down lightly, testing for packed snow or sturdy ground, then finally land. It's a peaceful setting, with sparrows flitting about, scattered grasses waving in the wind, and silence. A stark contrast to what it was like here in 1980, notes geologist Rick Hoblett.
We're standing in a location that received the full force of the debris avalanche and the subsequent lateral blast. So that mixture of hot gases and rock fragments swept out over the countryside to the north of the volcano. It covered an area of about 230 square miles in a period of about 4 or 5 minutes. Clearly impossible to escape.
That lateral blast is another surprise. Scientists expected a skyward explosion, but St. Helens bulged before it erupted. Magma pooled inside like blood in a blister, pushing out at the phenomenal geologic rate of 5 feet a day. That and a major earthquake triggered the collapse of the North Slope, exposing pressurized magma, which exploded outward at 300 miles an hour and as much as 600 degrees. People were killed 13 miles away in what were thought to be safe zones. Clouds and snow move in, so we make just one more stop at Spirit Lake, where rivulets of water spread like fingers out onto the pumice plain. Logs lie frozen in ice along the shore. This lake was 200 feet lower when the North Slope crashed into it in 1980. Geologist Rick Hoblett points to other evidence of the volcano's power.
The magnitude of the damage is kind of hard to comprehend. This slope over here was covered with these large mature evergreen trees, and they were growing in a soil that was on that slope. And now we have nothing but gray and brown barren rock. The debris avalanche scoured the trees, the soil, and even some of the rock away, so we're just down to barren rock.
It's that power that makes recovery at Mount St. Helens seem like resurrection. Back among the hummocks and ponds and geese and toads, ecologist Charlie Crisafulli explains why so many species revived despite that power.
Timing alone, the fact that the eruption occurred on May 18, 1980, when many of the lakes were buffered beneath ice and snow, that afforded aquatic species to survive relatively intact. Also, on north-facing slopes, you had snow, which protected plants and also invertebrate and small mammal communities. And so, in much of the area, you had these patches of survivorship.
Crisafulli notes something else about the natural forces brought to bear here. The biological slate was nearly wiped clean, he says, presenting scientists with something rare.
It's been a very exciting time at Mount St. Helens because you're overwhelmed by the complexities when you look at other systems, but here it has been rendered so simple. And it's simple because you have far fewer players and because the clock was set back so far, but we do see recovery. I mean, life is resilient, and no matter how hard it's hit, we're surprised time and time again, it keeps coming back.
Until the next cataclysmic eruption. Geologist Rick Hoblett says Mount St. Helens is quiet for now and slowly rebuilding. It could be a century, he says, but it could wake up tomorrow. That's something scientists still can't safely predict. I'm Howard Berkus, NPR News.
Our stories on Mount St. Helens were produced by Charlie Mayer and edited by Christopher Joyce. It's 11 minutes before the hour.